My Rock, Danmarks eneste rockradio. Fang os på FM, DAB, RadioPlay.dk og nu også som podcast. Velkommen til My Rock Podcast.
Det er endnu en gang blevet onsdag, og dermed tid til endnu en indsprøjtning af My Rock Podcast. Mit navn er Sten Skovgaard. Velkommen til. I denne udgave får du en double feature med to medlemmer af samme band. Det er nemlig Nita Strauss og Alice Cooper fra, ja, du har nok gættet det, Alice Cooper. I september kom Alice Cooper nemlig forbi Royal Arena med sit omvandrende horrorshow, der igennem de seneste 50 år har budt på kvælerslang og tortur, halshugning og henrettelser, zombier og sygeplejersker, der ikke ønsker at helbrede dig. Kort og godt, en masse blod og død. Og selvfølgelig også en masse udødelige hits. Inden showstart var My Rock så heldig at få en snak med både guitaristen Nita Strauss og Old Black Eyes himself, nemlig Alice Cooper. Vi starter podcasten med at høre fra Nita Strauss, der, hvis du ikke kender så meget til hende, er nummer et på Guitar Worlds liste over kvindelige guitarister, du bare skal kende. Så skam dig, hvis du ikke gør. Jeg taler med Nita om, hvordan hun kom med i Alice Coopers band, om hendes instrumentale soloalbum Controlled Chaos, om at være en superstjerne inden for amerikansk wrestling, og om at være den første kvinde, der har fået sin egen signaturgitar. Og nu har jeg brugt ordet kvinde flere gange allerede, så det var naturligvis oplagt at spørge hende, om det er noget, der går hende på, at det altid skal nævnes, at hun er kvinde. Men først så får du lige et nummer fra hendes soloalbum Controlled Chaos.
So, we're here with Nita Strauss, the touring guitarist of Alice Cooper. Hi, Nita. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. It's really, really fun being here in Copenhagen.
So, you've actually been here before?
Yes, yes. We were here a couple years ago for Copenhell.
Yeah. That was an outdoor venue. Mm-hmm. Now you're playing indoors. Is there any difference in the show?
No, no difference at all. I mean, it's a very different show from the last time we were here. You know, we're doing a completely different set list, all new songs. But, you know, for this band, we do the same show in a theater for 1,500 people or at a festival for 100,000 people. You're going to see the same show.
So those who are going to show up is actually going to have a great show.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, it's not ever the situation where we go, oh, there's not that many people here. We're not going to give it 100%. This band delivers every single night.
And you've been with Alice for 5 years now.
Yeah, just a little over 5 years.
How did you get the job?
I actually was recommended to play with Alice by one of his old bandmates, Kip Winger. And when Orianthe left the band, I knew they were looking for another female guitar player. And I'm really thankful that he suggested me to Alice and Shep Gordon and Bob Ezrin. And I went through a few rounds of auditions just like anybody else. Definitely was not just handed in my lap. And it's been an amazing experience so far.
And apart from doing this, you've done a lot of things over the years. You've been playing with the Iron Maidens, the old female Maiden tribute band.
That's right.
Tell me, what makes Iron Maiden so special to you that you had to be in a tribute band?
Well, actually, the band was already together for over 10 years before I started playing with them. And the Iron Maidens are kind of legendary in Los Angeles, where I'm from. You know, there's a bunch of beautiful girls playing Iron Maiden music. You can't really go wrong. And that's why they've been so successful, touring all over the world, and now have been together, I think, almost 20 years, I feel like, since 2001, the band started. So, you know, for me, it was more the idea of being in this really successful project. Of course, I love Iron Maiden, but it wasn't this burning desire, like, I must play Iron Maiden songs. It was more an amazing opportunity to play with this band, you know, tour all over the world, see some amazing countries, and play great songs.
But were you at a point where you had to choose between being in Iron Maidens and playing with Alice?
Of course, yeah. Alice Cooper is a full-time job. You know, it's not really fair of any musician to say to one band, well, I'm going to go be on tour for 10 months, but we can do 3 shows a year when I'm home. And I was never a full-time member of the band anyway. They always had other guitar players coming in. And, you know, now they have a full-time amazing guitar player, Nikki Stringfield, who's playing alongside Courtney Cox. It's the two guitar players, and they just kill it.
One of the things that I noticed, I actually never heard of that, but I saw that you played in the house band of the arena football team LA Kiss.
That's right, yeah.
Owned by Paul Stanley and Gene Simmons.
That's right.
How was that? What kind of experience was that?
Oh, it's a blast. You know, I'm a big sports fan, big, you know, especially football, American football. So, you know, arena football is a little different than the NFL, but still really, really cool to get to be a part of a football team, you know, playing the national anthem, playing some of the in-game stuff for the team. And it was really, really fun. And getting to do it alongside two rock legends was the icing on the cake.
Well, you opened up for the sports. I'll just skip the part about your solo album. We'll get back to that.
All right.
But let's stay with the sports, because
sure.
One of the songs from your album, Control Cares, was actually chosen by Triple H.
That's right.
For his theme. How was that to have a song chosen by a WWE superstar?
Well, actually, it's not his theme. It was a theme for one of the pay-per-views, for an NXT pay-per-view, War Games Los Angeles. But just to have Triple H listen to my music, I mean, what an honor. You know, we sent them the whole record, and I heard that he listened to the whole thing, and he chose that song in particular. And, you know, we've done a lot of work with WWE, from me playing at WrestleMania, and Lizzie Hale and I playing at Evolution, and then have my song to be one of the theme songs for TakeOver was just incredible. And we got to go to the pay-per-view and hear the song played in my home arena, the Staples Center. So it was just absolutely amazing.
But I was wondering, because looking at your Instagram, it seems that you're pretty close friends with Becky Lynch.
Oh, yeah. I haven't seen her in a while now that we're both so busy, but yeah.
But would there be an upcoming collaboration between the two of you?
If that was ever to happen, there would be nobody happier than me and Becky.
That would be so awesome.
Yeah. No, we would love that. We've talked about it at great length. You know, it's if that ever happens, we'll both be super happy.
And cutting to another wrestling legend, not in the WWE anymore, but Chris Jericho.
Yeah.
Actually, the frontman of the band Fosse as well.
Absolutely.
Online, at the moment, there's this trend, a little bit of the bubbly.
A little bit of the bubbly.
I don't know, exactly, I don't know if you've been one of the forerunners of this, but I have never laughed so hard in my life.
Oh my gosh, it's so funny.
It's hilarious.
It's hilarious, and I love that the little bit of the bubbly fever has swept to Copenhagen, and here we are talking about it. And,
exactly.
You know, my solo band had the opportunity to open for Fozzy for a couple shows on my last tour, and man, is that an amazing live band, you know, with Chris and Rich Ward and the guys, absolutely amazing band.
So I have to ask you, what which of the episodes of A Little Bit of the Bubbly is your favorite?
Oh my gosh.
And you can't pick Alice Cooper Poison.
No, not the Alice Cooper one. The Queen one was pretty funny when they said, I want it all, I want it now, I want a little bit of the bubbly. That one was pretty good. Which other one was good?
The Limp Bizkit
Limp
one?
Bizkit
yeah,
one.
Limp Bizkit one is, that is hilarious.
Yeah.
Ice Baby.
Which one?
Ice Baby.
Oh, yeah.
I haven't seen that one.
He goes, ice, bubbly.
Oh. That is so funny. We have to make a lot more of those hashtags, a little bit of the bubbly.
Yeah, I feel so like it's been dying out a little bit. So yeah. I think, I hope, you know, I'm not really skilled enough with video editing to do it myself, but I hope people listening to this bring it back because I love seeing it.
We have to push it.
Yeah. Def Leppard was another good one. They did.
Oh, yeah.
Pour Some Bubbly on Me.
That's almost too obvious.
Yeah.
Let's get back to the album,
sure.
Control Chaos.
Yeah,
it's almost exactly a year since it came out.
That's right, November.
And I was one of the things that struck me about the album is that putting out an instrumental album in then 2018, that's a bit gutsy.
Yeah, you know, we had a lot of people telling us, you know, Josh and I had a lot of people telling us that this isn't a good move and, you know, you should really, Nita should learn to sing or you should hire a singer, you should use different guest singers from different bands. And I love instrumental guitar music. I always have. It's my passion. It's what I got started listening to. It's what brought me to the world of guitar. So why not make the album that I want to make? You know, why not do what, you know, I spent so much of my career playing other people's songs and playing things the way that the industry says it should be played. Why not do just one thing the way that I want to do it?
Well, actually, one of my friends, a guy who owns a recording studio here in Copenhagen and plays with the likes of Glenn Hughes, played with Dave Mustaine.
Wow.
He's been around. He's actually also just 2 months ago put out a new instrumental album.
How cool.
He said to me, well, the reason I did it was to get it out of my system. I had so much in me that I had to get out.
Totally.
Is this the same thing with you?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I love playing guitar. I love playing Alice Cooper songs. I love playing Iron Maiden songs. I love playing my own songs. You know, there's not really a style of music I don't enjoy playing. I just love playing guitar. But at a certain point, as an artist, you just get to this point where you want to express yourself. You say, like, you know, by the way, guys, I have something to say also. And, you know, you spend, especially if you're a hired gun guitar player like me, you spend so much of your career realizing other people's vision. You know, with Alice Cooper, we spend the show really, you know, not to elevate ourselves, not to make Nita more famous, not to make Ryan more famous or Tommy more famous, to make Alice Cooper's show better. And it's nice to do something a little bit selfish as a musician and just say, this is what I want to do. This is what I feel strongly about. This is what I have to say as an artist.
And that's actually what you're going to do tomorrow, because tonight you're going to play with Alice in Royal Arena.
Mm-hmm.
But tomorrow you're going to do a clinic in Stockholm.
Yes.
So if you go to Anita Strauss clinic, what will you learn?
So my clinic is very real world. You know, a lot of guitar clinics that I've seen, you know, looked on YouTube and stuff is really technical. And, you know, this is how you use this shape over this chord. And I do touch on a bit of that. But mine is a lot more about my journey and what got me to this point as a guitar player. Because so many people just think like, oh, this opportunity comes and you're just lucky. And, you know, luck has very little to do with it. Some, but not everything. You know, it's a lot about the preparation and the steps that go into being that lucky. It takes a lot of work to be that lucky. So that's what I talk about a lot. And of course, you know, my music and the equipment that I use, it's all guitar players there. So, you know, my signature guitar, the Ibanez Jiva, these are D'Addario clinics. So, you know, I talk a lot about the strings that I use, the D'Addario NYXL, my signature pickups, the DiMarzio Pandemoniums, the Marshall amps that I use, just really all the really nerdy stuff that guitar players like to hear about.
So let's just touch ground on the Ibanez signature.
Yes.
Because you were the first female guitarist to have a signature.
Can you say that again?
You were the first. And it doesn't even feel real.
It doesn't even feel real to hear those words. But yes, I was the first female Ibanez signature artist, and I'm very honored.
But at some point, doesn't it get you pissed that you have to say female all the time, because there is basically no difference between a female guitarist or male guitarist?
Honestly, it doesn't.
Okay.
You know, if I let stuff like that bother me, I would just be miserable all the time. I would just, you know, spend my whole my whole day fighting against things that aren't fair in life. You know, I am a female guitar player. I shouldn't be any more offended by being called a female guitar player than a guitar player from Los Angeles. It's true. You know, it's not a secret. It's not something I try to keep hidden. And, you know, people that say, oh, aren't you offended to be on a list of 10 female guitar players instead of just a list of 10 guitar players? I'm just happy to be on any list. I'm glad they're talking about me, and I'm honored. And if they want to, you know, now I'm very, very grateful that I've made it to some of the main lists, the big lists, you know, best guitar players and not just best female guitar players. But anybody that's nitpicking about, you know, I don't want to be called a female, or I don't want to be called an American, or I don't want to be called a blonde, or, you know, whatever, it's just too much work. Be more grateful.
I saw you on the cover of a guitar magazine the other day at the airport. I can't remember whatever.
Total Guitar. I'm on the cover of that right now, yeah.
It might have been that, but I was just looking over the counters with, yeah, 5 guitar magazines. Okay, I got to have this one.
It's a good feeling. Actually, you know, my boyfriend Josh just arrived here in Europe a couple of days ago, and he bought me that magazine because I hadn't seen it yet. So it's really an honor. And, you know, I'm right next to James Hetfield on that cover and across from Steve Vai, and it's just, and, you know, Dr. Brian May and John Mayer, some of the incredible guitar players of our time. So I'm just, again, very honored to even be mentioned in the same breath as those guys.
So the journey of Nita Strauss has just begun.
I hope so.
Well, one of the journeys that actually started the Control Cares album was a Kickstarter funding.
That's right.
It finished, I read, in only 2 hours.
Well, we reached our goal in 2 hours, but luckily Kickstarter allows you to keep going. So we did do the whole 30 days of the campaign, and we ended up over 600% funded, which was an incredible testament to the people. You know, it's I can only do so much by myself. And the incredible response to the Kickstarter really showed me that all my effort and, you know, being genuine and being hardworking and telling, you know, I don't like the word the fans, but letting the fans know, letting the family of music lovers out there know that I'm going to deliver a quality product to them, it's really gratifying. You know, people say that people don't buy records anymore, but if you give them a good record, a good story, and somebody to get behind, I think we proved that they do.
Well, I guess that in rock, actually, people do buy records. I wouldn't think that it would be the part in pop or another genre.
Sure.
But in rock, people like to have like a physical thing.
Absolutely, yeah. It was interesting. One really, really interesting thing that I discovered was vinyl, because I'm not a vinyl person myself. I don't own a record player. You know, I get a lot of my music from streaming. And I didn't understand how passionate people felt about vinyl until I released vinyl. And then, you know, all of a sudden now, you know, we have 6 colorways. There's actually one specific to, you know, Eastern Europe, like this part of the world. And, you know, all people are collecting all 6 colors. And I didn't realize how passionate people are about it. So I'm glad that I could create something for that demographic of fans.
So what you're telling me is that the next album will be in 12 colors just to collect?
30 color vinyl, every color on the spectrum.
And speaking of the next album, because when you gave us Control Chaos, you signed with Sumerian Records.
That's right.
Was that just for this album or for a new album? Or
no, Sumerian is an amazing home for us. They've been really supportive. They're a really innovative band, you know, family of bands, and really, really excited to work on new stuff. So for sure, the next few, I think, will be under the Sumerian umbrella, and we're really happy to be there.
So are you working on new stuff?
Absolutely, yeah. Actually, I've just finished the structure of one of the first songs just a couple of days ago here on tour. I've got all my recording stuff out with me, and I recorded a lot of Controlled Chaos on the previous Alice Cooper tour, so it's really easy for me to just set up on a desk, you know, here in a hotel or the venue and just get some work done.
And work, well, let's call it work out, because that's, seeing your Instagram, that is what you do most of the time.
I do it, you know, I try to do an hour every day, whether it's yoga, you know, I do the DDP yoga with the app, whether it's weight training or cardio. And the cardio that I do on stage does not count. So I try to do a separate hour of working out. I think it's just good for your, not just good for your body, but also good for your mind.
It seems that you try to rate the different hotels that you're in according to what workout machines they got.
The gym.
Exactly. So you have you been to the gym here?
We were here the last couple of days. Yeah, so Josh and I have been in the gym both days that we were here, and it is lovely.
How would you rate it?
Definitely. It's a high rating, small, but a lot of equipment and really efficient. So definitely a good gym.
Actually, I wanted to ask Josh a question, if he's okay with that.
Yeah.
Because you're the guy pushing Nina.
Ha. She pushes herself. I just give a little boost.
So tell me, how is it working out on tour? Apart from being in your own gym,
you just have to make it the best. You have to make it the best you can. You know, you have to use what you have and, you know, make the best what you have with it. You know, it's hard to get the best workouts that you want, but you make it work. You know, if you want it bad enough, you'll make it happen.
You work around it.
Yeah.
Absolutely. All right. Josh and Nina, thanks for your time. We have to let over the room for Alice.
Yep.
Thank you.
For guitarist Nita Strauss går vi nu videre til hovedpersonen, Sprechstahlmeisteren og kongen af shockrock, Alice Cooper. Da Alice Cooper var i Danmark, gav han to interviews. Et til svensk TV4 og et til MyRock. Jeg kommer ind efter svensk TV4, og stemningen er, skal vi bare sige, på frysepunktet. Alice Cooper, han er træt af det hele. Han kan godt mærke, at det her interview, det er ikke gået lige efter planen. Og da han så meget, meget kægt spørger journalisten fra svensk TV4, nå, har du lyst til at komme til showet i aften? Så svarer hun, nej, jeg har et lille barn, jeg skal hjem og amme. Hvortil han siger, ja, jeg har også babyer med i mit show, jeg plejer at halshugge dem. Og så var det så min opgave at starte det interview op, og derfor lyder interviewstarten, som den gør. Jeg forsøger simpelthen at få Alice Cooper i gang. Og hvordan gør man det? Jo, man snakker om golf.
Lou Reed played golf. All the guys that stopped drinking and stopped doing drugs picked up a different addiction. And this addiction wasn't going to kill them. That's how I looked at it. I said, I need another addiction, but I want something that's not going to kill me. Because all my other addictions were killing me. But golf, you know, that's pretty cool. Get out there and do that every day on the road, you know.
Well, that is if the guys behind you actually don't yell four too many times.
When I first started, I was the secret weapon. I'd play with Phil Mickelson and these guys. And Phil would want me as a partner because he says, nobody knows you're good. All they know is you have hair down to here. So they figure you're just hacking it around. You know, he says, so let's play for money. You know.
Actually, I heard that Chris Fenn of Slipknot, that you did the Phil Campbell stuff with.
Yeah.
He's also
a good player. Yeah. I played with him. Yeah.
What's your handicap right now?
I'm 4.
You're 4?
Yeah.
All right.
But I tell you, the guy that's really good is the drummer for No Doubt, Adrian. Scratch golfer.
Wow.
I've played with him a couple of times, and he's a really good player.
So you shouldn't mess with rock stars.
Yeah.
On a golf course.
There's probably some country guys that can play out there, too. Vince Gill's a great player.
Mm. Yeah. Well, let's get to this. We're here with Alice Cooper.
Yep.
Thank you for taking your time to talk to Myra.
Sure.
How are you doing?
Everything's good. I mean, tour's great. This is the beginning of this tour, brand new show, brand new production. If you saw the show 2 years ago or a year ago, this is an entirely new production. We decided to make the stage look like, you know, when you go on that ride, say at Tivoli over here, and there's that spooky kind of nightmare ride there. You go inside and there's things are jumping out at you. That's what the stage looks like.
Ah, excellent.
And anything can happen on this stage. We make sure that things are coming out at you and doing all sorts of things.
But just to make sure, you haven't messed with the good old stuff like the nurses, the babies.
The nurse will be there tonight. The babies will be there. In fact, the babies are going to be there. It's kind of based around the babies, this one is. And there's a new character, Mademoiselle Guillotine. And that's my wife plays that. She comes down and she's in a bride's dress, but it's all covered in blood. Oh. You know, and she just kind of floats across the stage with a candelabra. And then comes back and then comes up the stage. So it's and there's smoke on the ground, so it looks like she's floating, you know.
Is that going to be with one of the old songs, Laces and...
Roses on White Lace.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, and during that song, the killer is talking about how the bloodstains on her white dress look like roses on white lace. He sees them as roses, you know. That's pretty sick.
Well, we'll get back to the show in a minute, but first we have to talk about the new EP, the Breadcrumbs EP.
Yeah.
Because that's pretty special. It's all based in Detroit.
It's, yeah, you know, I decided to do a tip of the hat to Detroit, which is hometown for me. Because when we moved there back in 1968, the band, L.A. didn't want any part of us. New York didn't want any part of us. The only place that really connected with Alice Cooper was Detroit, because we were a hard rock band. We were not peace and love, you know, like L.A. was or San Francisco. We were much more into Clockwork Orange and West Side Story, you know. And so when we got to Detroit, which was my hometown, we played a festival with Iggy and the Stooges and the MC5 and all these great Detroit bands. And then we got on stage and they kind of, you know, they only want hard rock in Detroit. That's why we did the tribute to them, because it's a hard rock town. And they saw us playing and they just, oh. And then when they found out I was from Detroit, then we fit right in with that, you know, Bob Seger, Ted Nugent, all those bands, you know. And so on this project, I said, we need to record it in Detroit. We need to only play with Detroit players. Now, the thing that makes that EP sound different from an Alice Cooper thing is that there's a built-in Motown sound that all Detroit players have. I don't know why, but it's built in the DNA. Back in the days, we would play like the Grandy Ballroom, and it would be the Stooges, Alice Cooper, and the Who, you know. I mean, you'd look down and there'd be Smokey Robinson and Stevie Wonder and all these guys from Motown, because they loved hard rock. And then when they would play, you know, they'd be on stage doing Motown and everything, and they'd look down and there'd be Alice and, you know, Iggy and all the guys, and we came to hear them play. So when you get a guy like Johnny B on drums, who played with Mitch Ryder, and you get Farner from, you know, Grand Funk, and Wayne Kramer, they have that Motown feel in the way they play. And it's something you can't describe. It's just there. So there's a little bit of R&B in these songs that I really wanted in there, you know.
Now it makes sense, because one of the things I was wondering when I listened to Breadcrumbs was, why did you put Shorty Long? With the blue dress on. Yeah. Why did you put that on? And now it makes sense, because the mix-up of the Motown.
It was really it. During the 68 riots in Detroit, if you were a long-haired guy in a rock band, you could go into any black bar downtown and you were fine, because you were not the enemy. You were a brother. And so, I mean, you were never going to get hurt at all. You were part of them. They were part of you. And that's what Detroit was like, you know. It was the music was sort of generated all everything in Detroit. That in the car and cars, everybody loved horsepower. I think that has to do with the sound. I really do. The more horsepower it was, the louder it was. That's what gave you the thrill. So they wanted the bands to do the same thing that the cars did, you know.
Besides the new EP, you also do your daily radio show, which airs on our station every night. I was wondering, you've been doing this for 15 years now.
Yeah.
Even when on tour.
Yeah.
And you said just before we started the interview, well, you just did 2 rounds of golf this morning. So how do you get the time to do all this?
It's, you know, I mean, you find a rhythm when you're touring. And we've been touring for 50 years, so we kind of know what the rhythm is. Since I don't drink now, since I don't smoke, since I don't take drugs, I get up in the morning, I play golf first thing, and I come back, and we either do a radio show, tape a radio show. We stay 10 days ahead. And then I do interviews. I do a couple interviews. Then my wife and I have lunch, go out shopping, whatever it is, come back, take a nap, go do the show. And that's kind of like the rhythm. Or you could even do this radio show on the bus. On the tour bus, because Pro Tools, you know, you can do all of the whole radio show on from anywhere, and that was the only reason I could do the radio show is because of Pro Tools. You know, I didn't have to sit in a studio. I wasn't like locked into a studio. I could move around.
You get your script from your people around the show.
Yeah, and then we just ignore it. And
exactly. Well, I'm the guy producing at the station, so oh yeah, you have to put in this song, and then no, he teased for another. Well, I have to put
well,
in this
you,
one.
What I do is like if I'm talking about something, you know, if I'm talking about dogs. You know, all of a sudden there's a story about dogs. Da 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 da. I'm either going to play Black Dog, or I'm going to play I Want to Be Your Dog by the Stooges, or I'm going to Martha My Dear by the Beatles. Something that has to do with dogs, rather than a Rush song.
Mm-hmm.
I'll put the Rush song later, you know, in another spot. But I always kind of say connect up what you're going to play with what you're talking about, you know, and they don't mind that as long as it fits into the format, you know. That's the freedom they gave me on the show, and I love that. You know,
have they ever written something in the script when you wrote it, read it, was like,
Absolutely. They write it, and I'll go like this. I'll go, nope. And I'll say, let me see, what's this last song? Jimi Hendrix. Okay, I'll tell the Jimi Hendrix story about how we first met, and I'll tell the whole story about Jimi Hendrix, and that's a better story than what they wrote. Now, you know. 7 times out of 10, what they wrote is pretty good. And I'll read it and riff on it a little bit, but I'll get the gist of it and try to connect it with what I'm going to play next.
But did they ever succeed in pulling your leg?
Oh, well, they've done a few things, yeah, where they, you know, where they tried to get me, but I could dance out of it, you know. I can dance right out of it.
We could keep on talking about the radio show. We could talk about golfing, but I really want to talk about Alice Cooper. Because a lot of people may know that, or some might not, know that Alice Cooper is a stage persona.
Yeah.
And a person off stage. So tell me, when did you invent the Alice Cooper stage persona?
The character evolved. You know, I mean, I played this character named Alice Cooper, and it was when I was drinking and taking drugs. So I didn't know where Alice ended and I began. There was a gray area there for a long time. Where I just went, I don't know if I'm supposed to be Alice today or if I'm when I'm on the. And when I got sober, I realized there are two characters. There's Jekyll and Hyde, you know. There's Jekyll who can sit and do this or go and do the Johnny Carson show or the Tonight Show and be funny or do a TV show and you know with Gene Wilder or somebody like that and show a different side. And then there's the stage character who I really love to play. I look forward to playing Alice because he's an arrogant, condescending, comical, you know, villain. Mm. I don't think you can do horror without doing comedy because horror by itself is boring. Horror with an edge of comedy and an edge of sensuality to it and an edge of sexuality to it makes the horror better. And it gives you what I call a pressure release. It's scary, 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 and then, oh, and you get a laugh out of it. Or you go, oh, you know, that's pretty neat. You know, we do a song called Man Behind the Mask tonight. And you can't do Man Behind the Mask without Jason showing up. And at least killing one teenager, you know. But I think the audience goes, they're hearing the song and they're going, all of a sudden they go, oh, Jason, you know, and then, oh my gosh, that's great, you know. And then you're right into the next song, a whole different song. And they go, well, what just happened? You know?
That's a good part of it. It's almost like a cabaret.
It's very much like vaudeville.
Yeah,
I let the lyrics decide what's going to happen on stage. When I do Billion Dollar Babies, I have this sword. It's actually Errol Flynn's sword, and I'm very, you know, it's about that, you know. And we shoot money into the audience because it's Billion Dollar Babies, and the sword is a big part of that. Very next song is Poison, where all of a sudden he's very aristocratic. And he's got a riding crop, and he's picking out certain girls in the audience and tapping them on the head and kind of teasing them a little bit. Because that's what that song wants, you know, for him to be this other thing now. You know, so every time, whatever the song decides it's going to be, that's what Alice is going to turn into.
I was thinking, today's show day, and in just a couple of hours, you'll be on stage. When do you turn into Alice Cooper?
The minute that I walk through that, the minute I hit, I see the audience, it's, I go from this to this. Then it's a different character. I'll be talking to him backstage, and I'll be saying, okay, now remember, we changed boots on this, da 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 da, and my cue comes up, and it's like, as soon as the show ends, right, I walk back, and I go, okay, anyways, about the boots. Because I can turn it on, turn it off, turn it on, turn it off. I don't need drugs to do that. I don't need alcohol to do that. I now know the character so well that I can do it just to do it. And I think good actors can do that. I think good actors can turn into their characters and turn them off. I spent some time with Jim Carrey, you know. And Jim Carrey, you'll be talking to him, and all of a sudden, he's, you know, some other character, you know, for about a minute and a half, and then he's back to being himself. And Peter Sellers was like that, too. You'd be talking to Peter Sellers, and all of a sudden, hello. And he's Clouseau, you know, and you go, oh, okay, you're Clouseau now.
Tonight at the show, we'll bring two of our listeners who won tickets and backstage passes for the show.
Yeah.
I was wondering, how many times have you been presented with the lines, we're not worthy?
A day? You mean per day?
Yeah.
Since 1989, three times a day.
At least.
Yeah, if I go out shopping. We're not worthy. And then you have to pretend like nobody's ever done that before. And you have to go, oh, how clever. You know, that's so clever of you. And I put my hand out, like in the movie, for them to kiss my ring, you know. But that's stuck with me in every airport. I don't care if it's China. I don't care if it's Russia. I don't care if it's Alaska. We're not worthy happens. It's just one of those catchphrases that everybody connects up with me, you know. And it's always funny. I mean, you know, it's just go, I get it. Yeah, I get it.
Alice, our time is up. I had a lot of more questions that I wanted to ask you, but that'll be another time.
The show. We got to get to the show.
Exactly. Thanks for your time.
Thank you, man.
My Rock Podcast.
Det var slut på denne udgave af My Rock Podcast med Nita Strauss og Alice Cooper. Jeg hedder Sten Skovgaard. Tusind tak, fordi du lyttede med.
My Rock Podcast.